Welcome to our service at Allegheny Baptist Church in Allegheny, New York. It's a very nice day today, which is a pleasant change. We find ourselves in 1 Corinthians today, chapter 7, and verses 1 through 16. And I want to read that portion in your hearing at this time, starting in verse 1. Now concerning the things about which you wrote, it is good for a man not to touch a woman. But because of immoralities, each man is to have his own wife, and each woman is to have her own husband. The husband must fulfill his duty to his wife, and likewise also the wife to her husband. The wife does not have authority over her own body, but the husband does, and likewise the husband does not have authority over his own body, but the wife does. Stop depriving one another except by agreement for a time, so that you may devote yourself to prayer, and come together again, so that Satan will not tempt you because of your lack of self-control. But this I say by way of concession, not of command. Yet I wish that all men were even as I myself am. However, each man has his own gift from God, one in this manner and another in that. But I say to the unmarried and to widows, it is good for them if they remain even as I. But if they do not have self-control, let them marry, for it is better to marry than to burn with passion. But to the married I give instruction, not I, but the Lord, that the wife should not leave her husband. But if she does leave, she must remain unmarried or else be reconciled to her husband, and that the husband should not divorce his wife. But to the rest I say, not the Lord, that if any brother has a wife who is an unbeliever and she consents to live with him, he must not divorce her. And a woman who has an unbelieving husband and he consents to live with her, she must not send her husband away. For the unbelieving husband is sanctified through his wife, and the unbelieving wife is sanctified through her believing husband. For otherwise your children are unclean, but now they are holy. Yet, if the unbelieving one leaves, let him leave. The brother or the sister is not under bondage in such cases, but God has called us to peace. For how do you know, O wife, whether you will save your husband? Or how do you know, O husband, whether you will save your wife? Now in this text, Paul is replying to a previous letter from Corinth that has not been preserved for us. So we have to remember this context. Paul has just written about various unrighteous practices, the question of various appetites, the issue of prostitutes in the city of Corinth. And so he's outlined practices that are not for the Christian. And further, he's answering a list of questions coming from this letter. And we cannot consider this section as an absolutely exhaustive teaching on such subjects as marriage, for Paul is treating a limited number of questions with this particular letter. So the issue remains as to what Christians may or should do, and also what is not permissible in the area of relations between men and women. Must a Christian be married? Must a Christian be unmarried? The answer is no, as Paul writes that celibacy is a perfectly acceptable state for the Christian man, but it's not commanded. Is it more spiritual to be single? Paul writes it's more convenient for ministry, but each person has their own gift in this particular area. Should those who are married ever be celibate? Paul says no, except for perhaps a short defined period of time. For those who are married, intimacy is to be between the husband and wife. Others outside the marriage are not to be included. Thus, marriage is to be exclusive in this area. Marriage is much more than intimacy, as there are many responsibilities that come with being married. Paul was traveling and preaching the gospel, and he was often in danger, and he was often dealing with hostile situations. To take a wife along would have been most difficult. In view of the missionary work he did and the persecutions he suffered, he thought it was better to be unattached. But he made it clear this was not a command. Paul expresses a wish that all men were like him in this area of life, but each has an individual gift from God in one way or another. And so along these lines, Paul tells the unmarried and the widows it's good to remain as they are. However, if they cannot live the celibate life, then get married. Now, for those who are married, there are several issues. Some had unsaved spouses, and others might have a desire to be divorced. Paul tells the Christian couple they should not divorce, and he carefully notes that that instruction is not his personal opinion, but comes from the Lord. For those with an unsaved spouse, he instructs them to remain with that spouse if the spouse consents to stay with them. For the influence and the example of the saved spouse is most important for the unsaved spouse and also for the children. Now, looking at historical context here, we should note that in the Roman world, there was four varieties of marriage, and we'll look at each of them in turn. Slaves, at the bottom, would marry if permitted by their owner. The owner would provide the mate. Now, the marriage was at the pleasure of the owner because he could sell one of the partners, and he could also arrange a different partner. Common law marriage was widely recognized if two people had lived together for a year. Now, a father in that ancient world might give his daughter in marriage to a prospective bridegroom. The word give there is something of a polite fiction. This was actually a sale, as he would receive money from the prospective husband, bride price. And finally, if we look at the people of the higher class, they were married in a ceremony. Both families would participate. There would be a best man and a matron of honor to accompany the bride and groom. The couple would exchange vows. The bride would wear a veil. Rings would be exchanged to be worn on the third finger of the left hand. Afterwards, there would be cake. Now, if this sounds like your wedding, that's not a coincidence at all. Our current wedding customs were essentially borrowed from the Romans. This is because the Roman Catholic Church adopted those wedding customs from Rome, and the Protestant Church, in turn, copied those customs from the Catholics. And so your wedding was borrowed from this particular date and this particular culture, whether you knew it or not. Now, the early church had people who were living in all four of these types of marriages. Divorce was common at the time, and so the church also had members who had been married and divorced. Apparently, some members had gotten the idea that being single was more spiritual than being married. And for the Jewish members of the church, Jewish tradition regarded being single as disobedience to the command of God to be fruitful and multiply and replenish the earth. And so for Jewish members of the church, being married was more spiritual. And so Paul was working to sort out these perceptions. And he starts out by saying it's good for a man not to touch a woman. Thus, it's fine to be single. There's no compelling need for everyone to be married. But the single man does not have relations with a woman. He will later say that if you're already married, don't seek to become single. And so there's no compelling need to be single or to become single. Let each man have his wife and let each woman have her own husband. This sets forth marriage as an exclusive relationship. Singleness and celibacy are not commanded, but faithfulness in marriage is commanded. The society at the time was immoral in this respect. And so this was a new and different message for the people to whom this was written. Verses 3 and 4 command husband and wives to care for each other in intimate matters, and this is important because here we see marriage and celibacy do not go together. It's not more spiritual for a married man or woman to become celibate as they are in a marriage and thus depriving their partner. And so the rights of the man and the rights of the woman are equal as both are to care for one another. An exception would be an agreed upon period to abstain from relation to permit a focus on prayer. And when such time is over, normal relations would resume. Now in verse 6, Paul is not commanding marriage or the single state. He says, I say by way of concession, not of command, I wish that all men were even as I am. It's brought out in the text that some can thrive in a single state and some desire to be married. He could wish all men were like him and that he enjoyed great freedom to travel and preach. And he also entered into danger where he would not have wanted to take a wife. Now, Paul writes elsewhere that he was sometimes hungry, sometimes ill-clothed, sometimes homeless. He did not have a wife to provide for or a wife to leave at home and worry about her being hungry when he was out. Now, in his particular case, it would have been most difficult to take a wife along on his missionary journeys, and it would have been equally difficult to leave her at home for long periods of time because in those times, a husband was needed to care for the wife and provide. So he saw great advantage in his single state, and particularly in times of persecution, which were frequent with him. But to be single is a gift from God. It's not for everyone. So the modern church needs to be careful of their attitude toward being single or being married. Single people can sometimes feel there's no place in the church for them due to the emphasis on couples and ministry to couples. And this can include young unmarried people or widows or widowers of an advanced age, because the church is for everyone and needs to find ways and means to minister to all and make all welcome. Most any church will have both married and single people, nor should the unmarried be criticized. If that is their gift from God, then it's not for us to criticize. Now, starting in verse 8, we see Paul giving advice to several classes of people, widows, unmarried, somewhat later in the text, and we'll get in this later at verse 25. Paul speaks to virgins. Both categories have no spouse. For the widows, their bond was severed by the death of their spouse. Since the unmarried are a separate category and with no spouse, it's most likely those are divorced people. To those who are not married, Paul says it's good if they remain even as he is. And this takes into consideration the opportunity to serve the Lord in an unencumbered manner and also the persecution from the Roman Empire. However, if they cannot live the single life, they should get married. To a Christian couple who desires to get married, they should do so rather than living together first. If this means a simpler and less expensive wedding, or perhaps a less expensive home or furnishings, let it be so. Now, in verse 10, we find advice to those in the church who are married. This would include all four types of marriage practiced in the ancient world. Now, remember, this letter is for Christians. Paul did not give commands to non-Christians. He wrote to the church. Paul makes it clear this teaching is from God. The wife should not leave her husband, and the husband should not send his wife away. Paul then deals with marriage where one spouse is an unbeliever. In this case, Paul tells the Christian spouse to stay if the unbelieving spouse is also content to stay. This sanctifies the home and the children through the Christian influence of the believing spouse. Practical experience teaches us that this is not the ideal situation, as there'll be a certain amount of conflict in that marriage. This is why Christians are advised elsewhere not to be unequally yoked with unbelievers. However, one Christian spouse is sufficient to make tremendous difference in the home and as an example to any children in the home. And so rather than the pagan spouse defiling the household and children, the Christian spouse will be light and salt to the household. What happens if the non-Christian spouse decides to dissolve the marriage? While the Christian spouse is advised to stay so long as the non-Christian spouse is content, there is a recognition that if the unbelieving spouse is determined to leave the marriage, there's not much that can be done. While this is true in many cases, sometimes the Christian spouse could resist the split up, but Paul does not advise or command this. His command is clear and brief. If the unbelieving spouse should leave, let them leave. Since the Christian is called to peace, they are not under continuing bondage to the unbelieving spouse. This text has much to say to the church today. We do not have slaves given a mate by their owners now. But look at what we do have. We do have people joined in a Roman-style wedding. It's very common. People also go and get a very simple marriage from a judge or justice of the peace. In this country, a bride price is not practiced. It's common in still in some parts of the world, but it is common in our culture for the parents of the bride to pay for the wedding. And that can be a very considerable cost. It seems to be getting more expensive year by year. We also have a great many people living together without being married. Most of them are not considered married, nor in most cases do they wish to be so considered. Our society did recognize common law marriage at one time, but in general, the legal system is moving away from recognition of common law marriage. Most states do not recognize common law marriage today, and a number have set a date after which common law marriage will no longer be recognized. Rather than a lengthy period of time with two people living together, today we see people going from partner to partner in shorter periods of time. For the judicial system, this would be a huge headache due to multiple partners and the difficulty of sorting out who is married to whom and for what period of time. Multiple questions arise, such as how long need people live together before they could be considered married, or what effect would it have if one partner left and lived with someone else for a period of time and then returned. Division of property becomes very difficult. If you are together today and split up tomorrow, who will own what? Judges do not want that headache. Also, many people who live together today do not wish to be married. Some do not want the commitment. Others worry about their property. Still others have been through a divorce and have vowed to never give another person that amount of authority and control. I've had all these sentiments and ideas expressed to me at one time or another by people that have gone through these things. So for whatever reason, they don't want the responsibility and the legal trappings that come from marriage. They want to be single in respect to their lives and their property and free to stay with a partner or leave entirely at their own option without legalities or expense. And so we see a tremendous desire in our society today to enjoy the benefits of having a spouse while avoiding the legal and social responsibilities of a spouse. Thus, single in theory, but with a partner in practice. And many people are considering this the best of worlds and the best of options for them. Now, for my advice, I would say for anybody contemplating marriage, take a good look at the intended spouse. Take your time. Make up your mind long before you take those wedding vows. Make up your mind to keep them. Faithfulness in marriage is still a command for Christians. Hasn't changed since this letter was written. And the advice for the Christian married to the unbeliever is still sound. But it would be better for the Christian not to get unequally yoked in the hopes that the spouse that is an unbeliever now would subsequently become a believer. Finally, we have to recognize that the command in this text are given to Christians regarding marriage, divorce, marriage to a non-Christian, or the single state. We cannot expect them to be followed by unbelievers or even recognized by unbelievers. And Paul knew this when he addressed the letter to the church. For those outside of the church live by their own precepts, back when Paul wrote the letter and today. So today, our society is moving ever further away from Christian principles in the relationships between men and women. However, as Christian people, we need to recognize that these commands, as they were written in the letter to the church at Corinth, are still valid for us, and we should be following them. Our benediction I took also from 2 Corinthians 13:11. Finally, brothers, rejoice. Aim for restoration. Comfort one another. Agree with one another. Live in peace. And the God of love and peace will be with you. Amen.